African-American community for over 40 years.
The views and opinions of the guest and host you hear on 1010 WOLB
are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Radio 1, its sponsors, or advertisers.
Eat up, little seagull. On a marble stand, trying to find the ocean, looking everywhere. Hard times in the city, in a hard town by the sea.
Corner with yours truly, Coach Butch McAdams, and featuring my dynamic co-host, the one, the only, Mr. T.J. Smith. And this show is sponsored in part by J&W Brown General Contracting. Now, they are a licensed full service, I repeat, full service home improvement contracting. All of your home improvement and renovational needs, that's interior and exterior. Write this number down. Give my man Brown from Sandtown a call. 410-728-5000. That's 410-728-5000. Now, let's talk about a step forward. And a step forward, they provide residential treatment services, mental health, and substance abuse for over 20 years. And if you or someone you know is in need, give them a call, 410-462-6001. That's 410-462-6001, and ask for Dr. Campbell. And finally, Shooting for Peace. That's a grassroots nonprofit, and listen to this. They use sports and current and former pro athletes to teach life lessons to youth and their families. And they're currently doing a summer camp, and then when school starts, they'll have an after-school sports clinic. You can reach out to them at 443-252-5519. That's 443-252-5519. And if you would like to be a sponsor on this show, just send me an email at butchmcadams@yahoo.com. That's butchmcadams@yahoo.com. T.J. Smith, welcome to another edition, my brother.
Coach, we have a lot to get into today. We have a special guest, so I think it's time to kick it off, my man.
All right, well, I will give you the honors to introduce our special guest.
All right, so if we can go ahead and bring him up, Commissioner Michael Harrison of the Baltimore Police Department. We appreciate you being here, Commissioner. Are you with us?
I am with you. Hello to both of you. Hello to your listening audience. I hope you can hear me well.
Yes, and thank you for your time. And want to let the listeners know that the commissioner, actually, his team reached out to us because he wanted to join us to talk to all of you. So I want to first quickly start off with your reaction to the election. I know you can't say a whole lot, but there's going to be a new prosecutor for your team to work with. And we know that a lot of your officers, FOP in particular, has been very critical of the current state's attorney. What do you think the morale is going to be like moving forward, because there is a change?
Well, you know, that remains to be seen. I've had an opportunity to speak with the newly elected state's attorney briefly, just to give him a congratulatory message and tell him, hey, I look forward to working with you. And, you know, we will see where things go. I have recognized that there have been members of our department, especially the union leadership, that have been very critical of the state's attorney. Well, they've been very critical of me as well. But you know, my job is to make sure I'm running and leading the police department and making sure that this department produces very good, high-quality criminal investigations to turn over to the state's attorney. And, you know, I think we have done a much better job than in previous years. And so now we move forward. The people have spoken, and we move forward. I'm just not the guy to revel in the past and on negative things. You know, my mind and my focus, all of my energy is moving forward into the future.
That's right. And looking at this weekend, it started out very violent on Friday night, Friday into Saturday. I believe there were 11 shootings and 3 murders. And this is something that we've seen this year continue. A lot of violent crime. We're past the pace of last year. Now, one of the things that you and the mayor have talked about and have touted as something that we believe will impact the violence is smart policing and redistricting. What I would like to try to understand, because I can't quite wrap my head around the redistricting with Eastern and Western District, especially historically being violent, the most violent districts, they're going to get bigger under the redistricting plan. But it doesn't appear that we're adding more police resources to the city at large. How does that square with the violence that we're seeing, making the areas that are already experiencing a disproportionate amount of violence? And I know one is a bit lower than last year, if not both, but they historically have been violent districts. So how do these smart policing models and this redistricting plan square with where we are currently with the violence?
Well, two great questions. Redistricting is not necessarily specifically about addressing violence. Redistricting is a state law mandate, a state law that was passed that mandates that we look at the boundary lines and redraw them, which haven't been done in over 50 years. The population was very different back then. Things that were there then are gone now. Things that are here now weren't there then. And the population is different. Crime is very different. And so we have to do what's called workload levelization, workload equalization. You may remember this in your time here, TJ, where some districts are just overworked during certain periods of the day and night, and some districts are underworked. And the way we allocate resources and assign police officers to districts, it wasn't based on workload. And now we are looking at workload assessment to levelize it across all 27 platoons, 3 per district in 9 districts, to make sure that whatever work is being done in one is being done the same way, and we're allocating the appropriate resources through police science to those districts. Now, some get bigger, some get smaller, but we have to utilize the resources that are already here. And then some will have to give up officers to go work in districts that got larger and picked up more work. This is designed to levelize and equalize that workload so that we can make sure we're appropriately giving resources to neighborhoods, that we keep neighborhoods together. We're not drawing a boundary line through the middle of a neighborhood, that we're reconnecting neighborhoods that were broken up, that we better align for the crime reduction strategy, and that we are smart about how we allocate resources. So that's what redistricting is all about. It's a state law that mandates we do it. Smart policing, secondly, is about reducing the amount of work that's already there. Yes, we're recruiting. Yes, we're working to retain officers, but that's hard. We're competing against all the jurisdictions in the state, quite frankly, in the country. So while we work to bring more people on, we have to work to reduce the workload. So smart policing is about moving calls that don't need a police response away from the police to be handled through technology and online reporting or by phone for those who don't have internet or may have some technological challenges. And number two, moving away from all of the traffic accidents that we handle, somewhere around 18,000, to a third-party vendor who could come in and handle that for us to free up that time. And then the moving away from responding to every single false alarm. When you think about the 18,000 false alarms that we respond to, 99.9% are not burglaries, but we're responding to false alarms and spending 20 to 40 to 50 minutes per officer per call. Now, when you take all of these things and add the time up, we can build that time back into the officer's workday to do community policing, proactive policing, hotspot policing, community engagement, all the above, the things that we don't do all that well because we just don't have the time. Mm-hmm. So redistricting equalizes the workload. Smart policing reduces the workload, giving us the free time so that while we work to bring more people, we can actually feel and look bigger than we are, being in more places than we can be, because we've moved some of the work away in a smart way.
Let me jump in here, Commissioner. And again, thanks for joining us. I know you have a meeting to go to, but the squeegee situation. Why haven't there been, and this may not be your call, but if the mayor or his people are listening, I cannot understand why someone have not called a moratorium on the use of a squeegee, okay? Because if you continuously keep them on the street, and I pray to God I'm wrong, but you don't want that possibility of something else really, really bad happening. There's no reason why they should be on the street. Now, you know, you can have alternative employment for them. So I'm not just saying moving the young people off the street without giving them other options of employment. But to continuously allow them, to me, it makes no sense, Commissioner.
Well, I get what you're saying, and to a large degree, I think many people understand where you are. And we're in the same place. It makes no sense. Here's what I can tell you, and this is what I think everybody really, people don't often think about this, but moving them, just moving them for the act of squeegeeing, by the way, which the U.S. Supreme Court has said you cannot move them for the act of squeegeeing because squeegeeing is panhandling, and enforcing against panhandling is unconstitutional. It is the moving people because they're not committing a crime that put us in this consent decree. So we can't just move them. And lawyers for 25 years have been debating this, and that's why there's never been a moratorium, because the Supreme Court has weighed in and said what we can and can't do. Now,
But I thought that there were an ordinance on the book, or laws on the book, that says that act of panhandling is illegal.
Well, it is illegal. The enforcement against panhandling is unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. Now, let me finish it out. There are aggressive panhandling laws on the books. There are traffic laws that are on the books by them impeding traffic. And, of course, when they commit other crimes in furtherance of squeegeeing, like assaults and damage to property, of course we enforce that. You've seen us make arrests on those things. We've talked about that. The act of squeegeeing alone, people have the right to ask for money. Now, when they get in the street and create a public safety hazard, those things have ordinance against them, but they're not arrestable offenses. They're only summonsable offenses through a citation. And you can't give a minor a citation. You have to give it to them in the presence of an adult. So you got to go chase down the parent, wherever the parent or guardian might be, just to issue something to a minor, because a minor can't legally.
Something has to be done. I appreciate you coming, and I'm not directing the frustration to you, but something has to be done, because again, you have people, and I'm not saying all, but there are people who feel like they're being extorted. There are people who have their property, i.e. their car or windshield wipers destroyed, and there have been reports, and I can't say it's valid or not, but there's been reports in the media that when folks call the police, it was, "I'm sorry, but it's nothing we can do about it."
That's the wrong answer. People should never say that. And if I find people saying that, that is the wrong response. What I was going to say before, what I wanted to say in continuation, is there are many things being done. I mean, we have more than 40, 50, maybe more than 60 that have been given jobs and are now working and not squeegeeing anymore. We're trying to reach even more.
Right.
And the mayor's office is taking a strong stance on helping with that. Yes, something has to be done, but something is being done. You know, but we're waiting for guidance from our lawyers and the city's legal team to tell us how we can go about enforcing and what actually needs to be enforced.
Well, but again, and I would love for the mayor to come on because he's basically has said that, you know, he's not going to remove the young people from the street. I just think it is a lose-lose for everyone in terms of people not wanting to come in the city, losing commerce in the city. It's a dangerous situation to have folks in traffic. And
I just wanted to follow up real quick. Commissioner, I had a friend who actually last week asked, they were scared to call in because they had a loved one who was accosted and ultimately vehicle was damaged by a squeegee person, and they decided not to report it because they felt they were going to be victimized more if they reported it. And that's like the perception that
we need to know about those incidents so that we can enforce it, because when we know about it, we go find those individuals and we arrest them, because those are arrestable offenses. And that's how we motivate them through consequences to not commit those kind of crimes, maybe even to not squeegee at all. And so, look, a lot is being done. And look, we're trying to get that message out. Many of these young men are already in jobs. We're trying to get more of them into employment opportunities. But we will wait instructions and guidance on how to enforce criminal law against them, because there's so many nuances and complexities to the enforcement that the Supreme Court has weighed in on that puts us in a tricky position as police.
My final question, Commissioner, when you saw the video of one of your police officers trying to instruct one of the squeegees, and what I saw was a blatant disrespect for law enforcement. That made me sick of the stomach, because I'm saying if they're going to display that type of disrespect to a police officer, then the average citizen doesn't have a chance. When you saw that, what was your initial reaction?
Well, I think my reaction was like yours. I'll take it a step further. It's not just blatant respect for a police officer. It's blatant disrespect for any authoritary figure, any figure of authority. And that's a societal and cultural thing that we have to deal with, to just re-educate them. First of all, they have to unlearn that bad behavior, and then we have to re-educate them on how to think about it. I thought the same way you thought, but I will give the officer a round of applause and congratulate the officer for working to de-escalate, keeping his cool, and doing exactly what we want police to do, and that's not to escalate, but try to de-escalate it.
And Commissioner, I know you got to get out of here, and I want to exit maybe on this. What is the agency doing? Where are we when we talk about internal discipline or internal reforms, I should say? We saw a former homicide investigator get sentenced last week. Unfortunate situation with this, kidnapping or whatever situation that took place. And these are challenges that go into cases where it jeopardizes getting bad guys off the street. I remember hoping that didn't happen. So where are we with that? What can you say to the public when it comes to the internal reforms to hold people accountable to capture that before it becomes a bigger issue?
Another great question. This department is a totally different department. We have that employee you're referring to is in the process of being terminated by the police department, and we have taken strong disciplinary action to termination on quite a few people, more so than many in previous years. And so the department is light years ahead of where it was 3 or 4 years ago, a totally different department, admittedly by the Department of Justice, who said, look, this is a brand new department. It's almost like hiring everybody new again in the new way, in the new reform initiative. Mm-hmm. And so things are very, very different, and we're holding people accountable. The change in the state law gives us more authority to do that, which is what's needed, and it's what people want to see, people being held accountable.
But before you leave, just give us one more minute, if you can. Sean, we have one caller that has a specific question to ask. Can you bring him up, please? Money Mike.
Hey, good morning, Coach. Good morning, Commissioner. Good morning, Mr. Smith. Look, Commissioner, can you tell me what happened to a woman by the name of Viola White? She's heard of in this city, and I hear lots of talk about her, but she was in charge of truancy, I believe. And what has happened with the truancy? Why are kids just walking the streets? That's number one. Number two is, I've been to Lexington Market every day. I work for the MTA. Upton and Penn North. What is going on with that situation? How can we improve Lexington Market when you got people milling around and there's no loitering. You know, the merchants have to make a complaint. I understand from this the Baltimore City Police that they got to complain about people. If they don't complain, then they get the loiter. And I will take my call off air.
Thank you, Mike. All right, Commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to the question about the female that you talked about, but I'll try to find that out. When it comes to the loitering, look, we're out there at Lexington Market and everywhere else in the city working to make sure people are not committing any criminal violations. If a person, you know, that's a challenge that we have, that if a person is just standing there not committing a crime, we can't just move people just because they're there and not committing a crime. That's what put us in the consent decree. We were doing that in previous years. We have to find a way to do that, and we're teaching officers to do that through engagement. Yes, we have to enforce laws that are enforceable, but we can disrupt that kind of behavior through high-level, high-quality community engagement. People don't want to stand there when the police are right there engaging, especially when they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. But I get it. We work on Lexington Market. There are other areas in the city that have the same problem that we're working on as well. But thank you for those questions.
And thank you for coming on, Commissioner. Thank you.
Yep. We'll get you back again soon, Commissioner. Appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Look forward to the
time. All right, and I have us Commissioner Michael Harrison. And all right, we're going to open the lines up in a minute. Write the number down, 410-481-1010, 410-481-1010. We want first-time callers. We want folks who don't normally call to share their opinion. And before we go to the lines, TJ, boy, last week, you were on the money. I got to give you your props. You called the state's attorney's race. You called it. You said Ivan Bates would emerge, and, man, he emerged big time. And we'll talk about that. And the gubernatorial, I missed it. You missed it. And Wes Moore, I don't want to call it a landslide, but he had a lot of margin for error in his victory. So I want to just focus real quickly on those two races. Your thoughts on the gubernatorial Democratic primary?
And let me say this. I want to jump back to something that Money Mike said in a second. But for those of you listening who were listening to Coach and I on the Larry Young Morning Show a few months ago, Coach and I are going to have some nothing burgers. If y'all remember that, y'all know what I'm saying. But real quick, let's go back to what Money Mike brought up. He was talking about Miss Violet Hill White. She was the first black female, actually first black police officer in Baltimore police history. It happened to be a female who was the first black police officer. And she worked in truancy for a number of years. And that's who he was referring to. And that's who the commissioner, that's who he was referring to. So I think it's very important. It's an important story. Lisa Robinson from WBAL TV did a great story on it. You can Google it to see more on that. But yes, that gubernatorial election, you said you wanted to bring that up. I'm not surprised by Wes Moore winning. We talked about that when we were doing the Larry Young Morning Show for my 2 weeks there, that he had a lot of momentum. And I thought that his the things that people were bringing up about him were minor in the overall spectrum of things. I thought Perez had a lot of momentum, and I thought that Francho was slowing down. For people in Baltimore who know Pimlico Racetrack, you know, as you take off at the Preakness, you start on Belvedere, and then you make that turn around Pimlico Road or Preakness Way, and you head down Northern Parkway to hit that home stretch. He was struggling when he got around the Northern Parkway, and he needed that race to be over with sooner than it was, and he started fading back, and it was more for the win. And the question that, you know, we ask in a more unbiased way was, what made the Democrat establishment rally around Wes Moore so early and so many big-name Democrats in this crowded field? It wasn't Rashawn Baker who they rallied around. It wasn't Peter French. It wasn't Doug Gansler. It wasn't Tom Perez. It wasn't John King. It wasn't any of these others.
And a relatively unknown in the arena of politics. That is an excellent question. The Democratic machine selected him as the chosen one. And as you said, they gave their full weight, full force of support behind him. My question is why?
Yeah, that was and there's a clip floating around. And for me, as a person that's more moderate and more centrist, it's fine by me. There's a clip of Wes floating around on the internet from C-SPAN from 2006, because now you have the uber progressives that are highly critical of Wes's win, and you have the uber right Trump type that are criticizing him, trying to paint him as a super leftist. But this particular clip is him in his own words saying he's got a little bit of Democrat in him, a little bit of Republican in him, and he's kind of a straight shooter, a balls and strikes guy, which I think most people can appreciate. If he can govern like that, he will be wildly successful. But the question becomes, can he govern like that with a lot of that establishment weight on his shoulders?
All right, now, the state's attorney's race, Marilyn Mosby is gone. She's yep. gone. And I heard a part of a previous show, and, man, folks were calling up making all kinds of excuses. One individual talked about, well, she didn't get elected because of the impending trial hanging overhead. Well, that's on her. That's on her team. Because the original date of the trial was in May. And that trial could have been over long before July the 19th. So don't come on this show with that foolishness. That's on them. Now, secondly, there were some people who didn't vote for her because of her impending legal structure of struggles. But I think the vast majority didn't vote for her because she did not do a good job. And I've said it before, I've told her this, that I believe she has a good heart. She's a wonderful person, but she is better suited as a political, meaning a council person, a mayor, versus a litigator. Because you can't mix the two. And that's what she tried to do. And in my opinion, she did a horrible job. And my last thing, I don't think she ran a good campaign.
Yeah.
I think that she felt that being the incumbent and being popular in certain circles was enough to get her over. And I thought so, too, because of the other two people. But that wasn't the case. She came in third. And I wish her well in the future, because, as I said, I think she has a good heart. She's not a bad person. But as a state's attorney in the last term, I'd give her a D minus.
You know, if there was a fourth person in this race on the Democratic side that could have gotten 10% of the vote, I think there's a very strong possibility that she would have won a third term. She still pulled in a healthy 29%, 30% of the vote. And that's nothing to, you know, shake your head at there.
She finished third, though. She finished third in a three-person race.
Yeah, and I understand that. And her and Theroux are, you know, a few hundred votes away from one another. But she still has had a very solid showing and a very low voter turnout. And she did it with very minimal resources. If you look at her campaign finance and the amount of money she took in, it was very low, surprisingly low. And it kind of showed the support that kind of eroded. And that support publicly started to erode. We talked about it last week with the whole thing with Larry Gibson and Kwesi Mfume, which was Theroux who drew that out, where it was kind of an era non-endorsement thing that didn't mean to get out, but it in error got out. So
yeah.
People kind of stood on the sidelines, and they seem to have done it with money as well. But she still, even with those obstacles, still got 30%. So, you know, it is what it is, and now it becomes the Ivan Bates thing and what happens moving forward. And is this a referendum on the progressive politics. Is this what happened in San Francisco, where they had a recall of their progressive prosecutor? Where here, we don't have the recall, but we had an election. And this is the election that says, okay, we tried it for 8 years. We don't like it. We're rejecting it. Now, let's turn this ship around. And who will be the last person standing? And is that now in the mayor's hand? Does he have to make
well, and finally, before we do go to the lines, if I'm the mayor, I'm looking at this. Because I think this was a message. And if he doesn't get it together, we just heard the commissioner talk about, well, they got to go and look at and see how they can do it. The mayor doesn't want to move those people off the street. He doesn't want to. Okay? And it will take someone, unfortunately, some violent action for them to do it. They should be off of the street, period. Period, mayor. Look around.
Hold on, Coach. You said it's going to take some violent action for him to do it. Did you say it's going to take a violent action to be moved off the street?
Well, you know what? It can't be any more violent than what happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's the
I mean, but
like I said,
well, it's not going to take anything then, and you're right. It's not going to take anything. He has the mindset, in my opinion, not of a mayor, but as a director of a grassroots organization, okay? And that's fine. But the two don't mix.
One thing I'm a bit confused about is the constitutionality of it. This, I don't know when that became a thing, because it's the first I heard of it. And one thing, and I think this is important to note. The commissioner's here, and he bared the brunt of this, and the police are on the front lines, and they bear the brunt of a lot of the criticism, but they can't operate in a vacuum and make the decisions in a vacuum, because if they arrest people and they aren't going to get prosecuted, they open themselves. And if they aren't supported by whether it's prosecution or the executive branch, then they can't do it. So, but we put the people who we talk to on the spot. But if you go to Martin Luther King near whether it's Pratt or Washington Boulevard, there are fresh signs that were erected in the last 2 years that say no panhandling, and it's against the law. So we have some conflicts going on, and I just don't remember a ruling coming down from the Supreme Court in the last couple of years that said panhandling and squeegee are now legal. I just don't remember that. And why didn't other cities get an invasion of squeegeeing and panhandling because of a new ruling from the right-leaning Supreme Court? I don't understand it.
Well, I would just prefer to. I don't have a problem per se with it, because panhandling normally is one individual, okay? But when you have a pack of individuals, you have four or five, I'm hearing, coming to cars, that's intimidating to people. That is intimidating. And to me, if I'm the mayor, I'd be damn embarrassed to have a squeegee situation in 2022. All right, folks, here's the number, 410-481-1010, 481-1010. All right, Sean, who do we have up? Is Don still there? All right, Don, come on up. Talk to us.
Yeah, good afternoon. Let me get my say on real quickly, Coach. The people, what I'm so happy about is my candidate lost. Make no question about that, Ms. Moldy, she lost. But what I'm satisfied is that the people of Baltimore, the voters who voted, decided they were going to get changed. I can accept that as a man. I can stand up and take that buck with me as a man. You said the other day, Coach, you were going to be sending me some flowers. I know you're joking and stuff like that, but I want to say I'm a man, so I ain't accepting flowers. You can send that to one of the switch hitters. I'm a straight-up man on that point of view. But at the same time, yes, my candidate, I wanted her in.
How about a box of tissue then? I'll send you some of that. Okay, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Well, I tell you, Coach, anyway, yes, but she lost, and I can deal with that as a man. I can accept that the people of Baltimore who voted her out. Okay, fine. Now, which arm is in there now? Ivan Bates, he's going to win the general. But he got a lot of pressure on his head now. And I can predict this, Coach. Ain't too much going to change as far as that murder concern in the next 4 or 5 years. I can let you know that right now. That's all he's going to do is lock up more and more people. And that's what you want, lock up more and more American black people.
Then no, no, no. What I want is more people who commit crimes who deserve to be locked up. Now, if they happen to be black, I'm okay with it. If they happen to be young, I'm okay with it. But if you commit a crime, then there has to be a consequence.
Yeah, but the police has got to do her job. They got to do their job, because they get paid, you know, to enforce the law. That's their job.
And she gets, well, look, you know what? Hey, man, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about Mosby, because she's gone. Okay, she's gone, so...
Right. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the police officers got to get out their car and do their job. Mosby, you know what I mean? That's my girl. She lost. I can accept that, Coach.
Okay.
And I'm moving on from that. Make no ifs, ands, buts about that.
Okay, yep.
I'm moving on from that.
Yep, she gone. All right, thank you, man. Thanks for the call. All right, 410-481-1010. Let's go back to the lines. And who's up next? Leo, talk to us.
Coach Butch McAdams, how you doing?
I'm doing good. What you got for us?
And Brother T.J. Smith, glad to hear from you guys. I guess I want to go back to something I heard T.J. speak to earlier in your show. You mentioned Lieutenant Violet Hill White. At least she retired as a person of great character in the police department, a black first black female. This issue of truancy. An issue of truancy. Now, I think Maryland law, correct me if I'm in error, but requires that our young people have to be in school until they're 16 years of age. They're required to go to school. I believe there's something on the books to that effect. My question is this: given the fact that this is a law, and given the fact that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, it didn't matter who was in charge, has not been enforcing the law in relationship to parents, is this just a political cop-out? Is this just something that's done to expedite the miseducation of black children? Because that's what's happening in the public schools, the inner city public schools of Baltimore City under the Sonia Santelices administration. We're in a, they can't read, they can't do math, Coach. But who's going to enforce the law, and why haven't they been enforcing the law on the city or state level?
Well, I look at it, unfortunately, Leo, because with people like you, I have a lot of respect for. You know, we disagree, but we never are disagreeable, because I respect your work that you've done and continue to do with youngsters through scouting. But I see a low bar in Baltimore, and the bar has gotten extremely lower under Brandon Scott. You know, you talk about Santelices. What was it, weeks ago, where he brought her in and gave her an award or recognition? And I'm saying, based on what?
Do you realize, TJ and the rest, that 40%, we're getting something on the order of 40-45% in inner city public school in Baltimore City in attendance on a daily basis? I mean, that's what they're recording. If you have less than half of the people who should be in school, why isn't there the courage to enforce? And it relates to the squeegee workers and all the other problems attendant to young people, because we need to do better by them in terms of education and curriculum change for the better and technical change in terms of trade schools. What are we going to do to change this paradigm to ensure that we really work to get our children in school in accord with the law?
All right, Leo, thanks for the call, man. We got to move on. Thanks for the call. But,
and Coach, Leo is spot on with that, but it's the bad word that we can't mention. If we go into some rooms and start bringing up this, which is called accountability, we're going to get called out, because it's going to be, well, some of these kids are poor, and we don't want to help pull them out of the situation so that they don't end up like the situation that they're in. And this is where I have an issue with that, repeating that cycle. Instead of demanding more and ensuring that you're not on that corner for that fast buck, we build the infrastructure with the government that we have around you, that we know
that we can fill in those gaps of food and diapers with little kids. It's ridiculous. And we think that 14-year-old during school hours, squeegeeing is okay, instead of, no, school is where you're going to be, and the things you need will make sure our...
But who would think that's okay? What rational adult would think it's okay for a 14 or 15-year-old who should be in school but is not on the corner? If you are an adult and you think that is acceptable, you are a co-conspirator to the destruction of black people.
Well, there are some who exist. Okay. There are some who exist, and some of them, albeit in the minority, have the loudest voices and their voters.
And all right, 410-481-1010. Let's go to Jacob. Jacob, you're up.
You guys have had some excellent, excellent guests since y'all been on the air. I don't know how y'all getting them.
And that's hey, we just starting, man.
It's great.
Yeah.
And you're looking at things with fresh, intelligent eyes, Coach, and I like that. It's the only two things that I didn't like in Baltimore so far, 17% turnout voter, that's disgusting.
It is.
Something that you brought up with the police commissioner, if that guy, that squeegee extortionist, would get in a police sergeant's face like that, I don't want nobody to go to jail, but he wouldn't have got to go train. He got to go to jail. He talking trash to a police sergeant down there on Mount Royal?
No,
I don't care what he is. He got to go. And I got to go and let somebody else talk. Thank you, guys.
All right, well said. All right, line available, 410-481-1010. John, you're up next. Coach's Corner, John.
Hello, Coach?
Yes.
And TJ, you should become a political forecaster. You hit just about every election correctly. But I just want to make two quick... Yeah, I'm serious about that. I just want to make two quick comments. Number one, the voters across the country have decided what approach they want toward crime, and given this crime wave. And Coach is in line with where they are. If you look at the recall in San Francisco, they recall a progressive prosecutor, 60-40. You look up in Minnesota, they turn down defund the police in 60-40. And Baltimore spoke up. They want a more vigorous approach. They want more police. They want respectful policing, but they want more police. And both candidates have set up, a moratorium, 2-1-2-1-3 months. And one quick comment, I'm going to get off the air. Nobody talks about a driver's right to privacy.
Wait.
A driver should be able to get in his or her car and drive from point A to point B without an uninvited intrusion into his or her space. And that's why the practice has to come to a close.
Thank you, John. Well said. To me, it is unconscionable for this mayor to allow this to happen and to hear, well, we're looking into it, and come on.
This would be a different conversation if there weren't assaults, there weren't just people just walking up to the car, taking it upon themselves. There have been stories, and I've read through some threads, where some of them will paint body parts, sexual body parts, with their squeegee brushes on windows of people. And look, this has been turned more into a racial issue than I think it actually is. The irony, I was reading a thread of all black people, and 90% of them were saying how much they can't stand the issue. And it's like, why are we turning something into a racial issue that really isn't? And the majority of people are saying, we don't want to send them to jail, but you have to take them off the corner. And the more you don't take them off the corner, the more volatile you're making the situation.
I agree. All right, let's go to Jetson. Jetson, you're up next. Talk to me, Jetson.
How you doing, Coach? Welcome to the city.
All right, man. Well, I'm not in the city, man, and I love you, but, man, I don't want to come to the city. I do not want to come to the city, so y'all don't invite me to nothing in the city. Now, if it's out in the county, I'll come out there.
Coach, you got to come to my club there. I'm a member and an officer.
Well, you know I love you, and I've been there before.
Arts Social Club, Pennsylvania North, and you had you were talking to the police commissioner, talking about they said no lottering, and they and the police department told us about putting lottering signs up. We put them up, and people don't pay no attention to that, you know. And but Arts Social Club is the oldest black social club in the United States. We are 100 years old. We got whiskey license ever since Prohibition. We probably got the oldest liquor license in the city. So we still want to stay in business if people, you know, will patronize and people feel comfortable coming up there.
Yeah, that, and it's unfortunate. Like I told you guys, I tell you several years ago, I was hoping y'all would move, man. Because it's a fine place. I've been there several times, you know, top flight people, good time. But, man, getting in there, getting out from your car on northern Pennsylvania, that's a deterrent for a lot of people, man.
Well, we hope people have a change of heart. Matter of fact, we got a show coming up this coming Saturday. So,
do y'all have security with people out there walking folks to the cars and stuff?
Yeah, if a person needs help or something, we try to accommodate them, and then we'll call on the police to assist whatever, you know. We're not in full operation, so we don't have the security that we used to have, because we're in a renovation stage. Court.
All right, Jetson, thanks, man. I got to move on. Thank you, brother.
Right. Keep up good work.
All right, 410-481-1010. Lee, you're up next. Talk to me, Lee.
Hey, what's up, Coach? What's going on, TJ? Hey, look, man. Hey, I know you got that number 45 jersey on from Chicago. You on fire this morning. Hey, look, hey, man, I told you about 2 weeks ago, man. Stop blaming Brandon Scott and all these public officials, man. It's not their fault. The man, Michael Harrison, just told you they can't move them out the street. So take it to the citizens. Stop giving them kids money. You got to stop and they will leave. It's that simple. You know, so for people call up complaining,
But you know what's going to happen, man? But what's going to happen, and TJ, please chime in because you would know this better. But if that happens, then more and more property damage will occur.
I don't believe that, Coach. I believe that they will leave the city. They will leave the corners. They will stop standing there trying to squeeze your car because they're not making no money. If you stop giving the money, they will leave and go try to do something else.
Who do you think, TJ?
Listen,
I think that would be logical if 100% of the people agreed that it's a problem. The problem is 100% of the people don't agree that that's a problem. It's people who don't live in the communities that it's a problem for that continuously give them this money. So we won't ever have that. You know, the people that don't give them money don't give them money. That's not the issue, unfortunately. So it's people that, you know, they treat it like a pet project, getting the guilt off their shoulders. I gave a poor black kid money today. They go home and tell their families. They think they did something reparations for some folks.
Those people just adding fuel to the fire.
Because they don't know any better, and they think they did some good for society giving these kids money when that kid could be in school, they're not teaching a young black boy about what life is like to be a man.
And stop calling them squeegee workers. That's not work.
It's not work.
That's a hustle.
Know,
all right, thank you, man. Thanks, Lee. But that's a hustle. That is a hustle. And, you know, I think... You know, Bates has said he's got a plan, and he's voice to get them off the street before something else happens. All right, something else happens. I think that the city will do better under the state's attorney leadership of Ivan Bates versus what we've witnessed at least in the last 4 years. And I think, yeah, go ahead.
Just even from a mere communication perspective, like one of my biggest things was, can we quietly make reforms in the background where if we're not prosecuting low-level offenders? Like
if Macy's isn't going to lock you up for stealing $100 worth of stuff, I don't know that I would have a press conference and go on the news every week saying we're not going to lock you up.
No, that's my point. That's my point. And I know some of y'all love Marilyn, and that she's a likable person. But a likable person has nothing to do with performing your job. I'm going to say it again. I know some of y'all saying I can't stand that coach. Hey, if you can't stand me, why are you listening? She is better suited as a politician, as a mayor, as a council person than a litigator. You're right. You don't make that statement. And then people talk about, well, she saved the city. Well, what she did, again.
Hold on. Do we have some breaking news here, Coach? Because I've heard you say it multiple times on this show. She's better suited for mayor. So are you planning to run Mosby 24 as mayor, as their campaign manager or something?
Oh, no, I just think that.
I think that
her philosophy and how she handles her work is more suited for a political than a litigator. And you just laid it out. You don't have to call a press conference to say, I will not prosecute the following crimes. Or you don't have to do it. You don't have to call a press conference during Freddie Gray. I've heard you. And so now we're going to do A, B, C, D. And guess what? When it was time to get a conviction, she was over. And don't any of y'all talk about, well, why are these black men talking? No, we're not. This is not a man talking about a woman. This is, we are talking about someone professionally. Okay? That's what we're talking about. I heard someone talk about early in the show about the Willie Lynch. Let me tell y'all about Willie Lynch. If you think Willie Lynch was an actual person, and that happened, then you believe in the Tooth Fairy, the Bunny Rabbit, Santa Claus, and all that other stuff. Willie Lynch was concocted by a brilliant black individual to point out some of the things that we need to do as a collective to move forward. Agree or disagree?
And that we don't have enough time left to get into an elongated conversation about those parables, as a matter of fact, that we can go down a litany of. And at the end of the day, and many of our callers know this, we have to get out of our own way and our own self-victimization to move forward and allow ourselves to be the strong inner people that we know we are to be better. And we can do it. The infrastructure's there and set for us, but we can't keep pulling ourselves and dragging ourselves down.
Let's see if we can get one or two more calls before we exit. Who do we have up next? We have William. William, are you there? All right, blow it real quick. Talk to me.
Yeah, how you doing, Coach and TJ? It's two things I agree and disagree. Like, the Art Social Club, I don't think they should move. We're trying to bring the Avenue back, and they were just given $6 million to renovate, so they renovated big time. And Morgan and different colleges, about 2 years ago, they had a parade coming down Pennsylvania Avenue trying to change the attitudes of the
boys. Average person at night, the average person, Glory, the average person right now, and it's not their fault, but they don't feel safe going to.
Coach, and not to cut you off, and I understand, Coach, I was born like them hustlers. They're not, there's no job. They call them squeegee boys, but that's a hustle because I was born and raised in that area, and
it's
I knew
a bad it. Hustle. It's a bad hustle.
And I agree, but when you don't have schools and we don't have no jobs, man, because I came up, and luckily I thought I was always thinking outside the box. I have four successful businesses coming through the city because I didn't think like them. So until they get that back where they can get trades, you know, it's trade
them off the street. Get them off the street.
And I'll agree, Coach.
Right, thanks, Floyd.
Real quick. I think that we have this automatic button that we push that we every time it's out, automatic go-to. There are no jobs. That is false. There are jobs.
Okay.
To need job training programs. I did a podcast last week with one. I've spoken to many others. They don't want the jobs that are available for them. All right.
If you think that's on a big scale, I mean, I can't argue with you on that. But can I make one quick point? And I always say, like, those, we know the problem with those squeezy boys or whatever. If the public, we got cars, we got windshield wipers, and we know when we come out, we're supposed to make sure we got tires on that car and the fluids are level and clean windshield. If the public would do the right thing, and they will go away, and I forget what mayor had it was. They had a program set up for the public to send their money to this organization, and then the panhandlers and the hustlers on that corner will go away.
All right, thank you. But see, again, folks, why are some of y'all letting the elected officials off the hook? They're going to put it on the citizens versus it's a team effort. But it starts at the top. I don't know, man. What kind of water do y'all drink over there? Because I want to make sure I don't get any of that.
It's not Bama water from your area. I can tell you that much. We got some of the best tap water in the country in Baltimore. I can assure you that. And you can look up the record.
Well, some of the people that
DC sanitation water.
Well, I don't know what they drinking then. But anyway. Hey, man, once again, great show. And you know, as one of the callers said, yeah, we're going to continuously bring you top flight guests because that's what we do. And you may not always agree with us, but we're going to keep it real. And, hey, you've heard of the equalizer. We're the balancer, or at least I am. So for T.J. Smith, this is Coach Butch McAdams. And you've been listening to the Coach's Corner. Check us out, same time, same station, next week. Be blessed.
In a hard town by the sea. Ain't nowhere to run to.